This is Radio Energy News.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Edinburgh Napier's Radio Energy. My name is David Paul. Coming up in the next half hour...
As a result of the Brexit vote, we know that change is now inevitable. The question is, what kind of change is right for Scotland? And should that be decided for us or by us?
Nicola Sturgeon asked Scottish MSPs today to back her attempts to hold IndyRev 2 by 2018. She can count on the support of the Green Party, but no one else. Also, Irish politician Martin McGuinness has died today. We'll be looking at the life of Northern Ireland's controversial former Deputy First Minister and Sinn Féin member. Lastly, Norwegians are apparently the world's happiest people. But why? And where does that leave us here in Scotland? Are we a happy nation? We will try to find out. But first, here is today's news bulletin with Fraser Monro.
This is Radio Energy News.
Scotland's Parliament has begun debating Nicola Sturgeon's proposals for a second independence referendum. The First Minister wants a vote in either autumn 2018 or spring 2019. The SNP's Linda Fabiani is a deputy presiding officer at Holyrood.
The SNP is working in the best interests of Scotland. And if we get to the point where there is a referendum on independence, that's when we will put our cards on the table and say to people what this country can be, because that's what it's about. It's the kind of country we want to live in.
Britain will announce a ban on laptops and other electronic devices on certain flights. This is following a US announcement this morning banning devices larger than mobile phones on flights from 8 Middle Eastern and African countries. The Department for Homeland Security in the US said extremists were seeking innovative methods to bring down jets and that bombs could be hidden in electronics. Sky's defence correspondent Alistair Bunkle explains the reasons for the new policy.
This isn't based on specific intelligence of an upcoming attack. It's more about general intelligence, the general threat from terrorism against aviation towards Britain and America.
McGuinness, one of the most influential politicians in Northern Ireland, has died, aged 66. He recently stepped down as Deputy First Minister of Northern Ireland and was a key figure in the negotiations of 20 years ago, which brought into peace into Northern Ireland. McGuinness died in a hospital in Derry this morning from a genetic heart disease. Gerry Adams, his closest political ally, says McGuinness worked tirelessly for peace.
A very passionate Irish Republican. He believed that our people of this island, should be free. He believed in reconciliation. He worked very, very hard at all of that.
Rising fuel and food prices have pushed inflation beyond the Bank of England's 2% target in February. Food prices have had their first annual increase for more than 2.5 years. The reason is that imported goods have become more expensive following the Brexit vote. The Consumer Prices Index had reached 2.3% last month, the highest it has been since September 2013. The Bank of England has said it expects inflation will peak at 2.8% next year. The ticket resale website Viagogo refused to send a representative to a select committee hearing before the Department for Culture, Media and Sports Committee. An advance request was sent to Viagogo to appear at the meeting as part of an inquiry into the ticket abuse. MPs have said they are horrified that tickets for one of Ed Sheeran's charity gigs were on sale for more than £5,000. Music tour producer Stuart Garbraith explains the problems with the ticket touting sites.
What I really have an issue with is that they do that when there are still enormous volumes of primary tickets at face value available. So where you had the opportunity to buy a ticket for Ed at £75, they're actually pushing you into their site that they own.
A new bus service linking the north of Edinburgh to the airport is set to launch next month. The number 200 will run between Ocean Terminal and Edinburgh Airport through Climerston and Muirhouse from the 23rd of April. Campaigners in the north of the city have called for a new airport bus, as they say it would reduce car dumping in areas like Gorstorfin and provide cheaper alternative to taxis and airport parking. Further changes are being looked at into the route extensions to destinations including Fort Kinnaird Retail Park, Edinburgh Park and the Gael Shopping Centre. A man has come forward to speak to the police after a toddler was assaulted on a train in Edinburgh. British Transport Police had released a CCTV image of a man officers wanted to speak to in connection with the assault against a young child. The alleged incident took place at 4 p.m. at Edinburgh Waverley to Peterborough service on Sunday the 12th of February in 2017. an 8-year-old girl has written to the South Lanarkshire Council after she found her twin brother Isaac was unable to go on the swings. The twins, Naomi and Isaac, are autistic, and Isaac is visually impaired by a brain tumour and cannot hold on to a normal swing. They visited a new park near their home in Hamilton. Naomi was disappointed her brother could not use the swings, so she wrote a letter to the council asking for a disabled swing. The council got in touch with the twins' mother on Twitter, saying they were looking to incorporate a disabled seat on the swing frame. Colin Dexter, the Inspector Morse author, died aged 86. His publisher, Macmillan, says he passed away peacefully in his home in Oxford this morning. He was best known for writing crime novels, which gave way to the long-running TV series and spin-offs Endeavour and Lewis.
Thank you, Fraser. Today, the Scottish Parliament started its two-way debate on whether to seek permission to hold a second independence referendum. The SNP say they believe that they have moral authority to call another referendum, but it is the UK government who have the legal authority to decide when it will actually take place. Prime Minister Theresa May has declared now is not the time for a referendum, insisting that the focus should instead be on getting the best deal for the whole of the UK during the forthcoming negotiations with the EU. Our reporter, Denita Sokova, is at Holyrood.
Today, all of the parties in Holyrood presented their amendments to Nicola Sturgeon's call for a second independence referendum. The First Minister opened the debate by stating that the question is what change is right for Scotland and should that choice be made for us or by us. She said there was no indication at all that Scotland's voice was being heard at Westminster. The Scottish Tory leader, Ruth Davidson, responded by saying that the Scottish government promised the independence referendum in 2014 was a once in a generation. She claimed that the First Minister's announcement has led to a drop in support for independence. Scottish Labour leader, Kezia Dugdale, noted that a second independence referendum would only increase uncertainty and cause greater division as the UK faces a hard Tory Brexit. And Scottish Liberal Democrats leader, Leary Rennie, said there is no guarantee that full membership of the EU will be sought or granted. The debate continues tomorrow, and the vote is scheduled for 5 in the afternoon.
Denita Sokova reporting from Holyrood there. Scotland's First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, said last week that a referendum would need to be held before Brexit to prevent Scotland facing a lengthy period outside both the EU and the single market if it becomes independent. Today, in the Scottish Parliament debate, Ms Sturgeon called on MSPs to back her request to Westminster for a Section 30 order.
As a result of the Brexit vote, we know that change is now inevitable. The question is, what kind of change is right for Scotland? And should that be decided for us or by us? Where there is a difference of opinion about the best way forward, the best thing to do is to allow people to choose the best way forward.
The motion says the referendum would most appropriately be held between the autumn of 2018, when there is expected to be clarity over the outcome of the UK's Brexit negotiations, and the spring of the following year, when the UK is due to leave the EU. Scottish Labour and Liberal Democrats have made clear that they will seek to block such a ballot, with the Conservatives tabling an amendment calling for the Parliament to rule out a referendum before April 2019. Scottish Conservative leader Ruth Davidson said it was clear that a majority of people in Scotland do not want a rerun of the 2014 referendum, when voters rejected independence by 55% to 45%.
Most people in Scotland are sick to death of the games. Most people in Scotland don't want another referendum anytime soon, just 3 years after the last one. And most people in Scotland see the plain common sense in our own position. The Brexit is going to be a major challenge for this country. And none of us know how it will play out. None of us know how we will come through it. And none of us know what impact there will be for our country. Which is exactly why we question how can we make a decision on our future constitutional path at a time of such uncertainty.
Despite opposition, it's expected the Parliament will vote in favour of Section 30. This is because the pro-independent Scottish Greens, who have six MSPs, have confirmed that they will give the First Minister the support she needs for her motion to be passed on Wednesday afternoon. Ruth Davidson urged the Scottish Green Party to rethink their support for the SNP.
We know that the Scottish Greens are different. That's a party that claims to stand by its commitment. So we therefore call on them today to stick by their pledge to the people of Scotland. They said it should only come about by the will of the people. Well, there is none. They said it should not be driven by the calculations of party political advantage. Well, I'm afraid there's plenty of that. So I warn them today, dump the promises and push this over the line. And their position as the self-appointed moral guardians in this place will be no more.
Labour MSP Daniel Johnson spoke of what can be expected in reaction to the vote.
What there will be is a very strong and clear Labour campaign to keep Scotland in the United Kingdom, because we believe very strongly in the power of being able to pool and share resources right the way across the United Kingdom. We think that as a party, that politically what is important is that where people have common interests, that they work together. So that will be the basis of our campaign.
Dr. Alan Convery from Edinburgh University thinks the Prime Minister Theresa May is unlikely to allow the referendum before Britain leaves the EU.
In terms of the timing, I think they'll want to ensure, first of all, that it doesn't interfere with negotiations. So the UK government's bandwidth is already taken up by this massive negotiation. And to ask it on top of that, you know, the biggest peacetime negotiation the UK government's engaged in, to ask it on top of that to start also talking about the possible secession of Scotland, I think is too much.
Dr. Convery also thinks that the UK government has not responded well to the SNP challenge.
She needs to make the least bad choice in terms of her party's position, in terms of the UK government's position. Though it seems to me that she has conceded the principle of a referendum at some point, but not said when. But that led her to the position of saying no to the SNP rather than saying yes, but. And I think that probably might have been a PR mistake.
Martin McGuinness, possibly the biggest figure in modern Irish politics, has died today, aged 66. McGuinness's political career spanned decades, and saw his involvement in both the bulk of the Northern Irish conflict as well as the trials and tribulations of the Stormont Parliament. His actions during this time as an IRA commander continue to be controversial, but most political figures are choosing to remember him as a peacemaker and as a leader of the Northern Irish government. Bryce Arthur has the story.
An irredeemable terrorist to some and a consummate politician to others. The one thing that can be agreed on about the late Martin McGuinness is that he was a hugely polarising figure. Most of the UK's senior government has commented on his passing, but all who did have had to acknowledge both sides of McGuinness's life, that of an IRA chief and that of a peacemaker, a man who, above all else, sought to end the conflict in Ireland. Prime Minister Theresa May attempted a balanced statement, saying that though she could never condone the path he took in the earlier part of his life, Mr. McGuinness played a defining role in leading Irish Republicans away from violence. Tony Blair, who was Prime Minister during the negotiations for the Good Friday Agreement, spoke on how McGuinness's leadership had led to genuine peace in Northern Ireland.
There are some people who will always remember him as the man of war and who can never forget the violence of his early years. But for those of us who helped put together the Northern Ireland peace process with him, we will remember his legacy as the man of peace, the person whose courage and determination and leadership in the end brought us from a situation where every day people were either being injured or killed as a result of the troubles in Northern Ireland, to a place today where it's possible to talk of a genuine peace in Northern Ireland.
Martin McGuinness, born in Derry to Catholic parents, joined the IRA at the young age of 19. He worked his way up their ranks, becoming second in command of the IRA's Derry branch in 1971. Then, in 1972, the Troubles saw a considerable escalation on Bloody Sunday, where 14 civil rights activists were shot dead by British troops. The year after, McGuinness was arrested and imprisoned for 6 months after being caught transporting explosives, and arrested again after his release for IRA membership. Following this, he moved his focus away from paramilitary action to Sinn Féin, the political branch of the IRA. Despite an apparent move away from his inarguably terrorist origins, McGuinness was accused of being involved with multiple acts of violence throughout the 70s and 80s, such as the Remembrance Day bombing at Enniskillen, which killed 11. As late as 1993, Martin McGuinness was referred to in a TV report on the Troubles as Britain's number one terrorist.
Our position is clear, and it will never, never, never change. The war against British rule must continue until freedom is achieved. Don't go, my friends. We will lead you to the Republic.
More recently, McGuinness has been in the news for his resignation from his position as Deputy First Minister. Although this came only 2 months prior to his death, McGuinness always strenuously denied he was resigning for health reasons, instead saying that he was leaving to protest the Unionist Party's botched energy scheme. The scandal surrounding this scheme is thought to have cost the government of Stormont nearly £500 million.
My health has absolutely nothing to do with this whatsoever. I have been very deeply involved in all of the conversations in the course of recent weeks, not just with our negotiating team, but I was here last week speaking to Arlene Foster. I've been doing my job, as is appropriate for me to do so. So health has got absolutely nothing to do with it whatsoever.
There has been substantial controversy surrounding the life of Martin McGuinness. Though most politicians seem to have forgiven his earlier actions because of his substantial part in the peace process, others still are glad to see his passing. Lord Tebbit, whose wife was paralysed by an IRA bomb, has said the world is a sweeter place after his death. Opinion remains divided and will probably remain divided for many years to come.
As much of Scotland has been hit overnight by snow, here in Edinburgh, spring begins. Flowers begin to grow, and Holyrood Palace springs back to the 17th century by announcing plans to build a herb garden. The grounds will replicate Scotland's first botanical garden, designed to teach students about the medicinal properties of plants. The new attraction could help the palace blossom and get it back on the top 10 list of Scottish tourist attractions. Peter Hamill has more details.
I'm standing here in the secret herb garden just outside of Edinburgh on the first day of spring. Parts of Scotland have been struck by springtime blizzards, but the sun is out in Edinburgh to help kick off the new season. Today, the Royal Collection Trust announced plans for a new medicinal herb garden that will be created in the Palace of Holyrood House. The garden takes its theme and inspiration from an herb garden dating back to the 17th century and will be constructed in the area behind the Abbey Strand buildings. Originally serving as a scientific ground for pharmaceutical and medicinal education, the garden will continue its scientific purpose despite being a massive attraction for tourists. Julie, a gardener at the Secret Herb Garden, tells us the importance of medicinal plants.
So we've got some things from around the world, but the most common things like the dandelion that everybody knows and the daisy, these have medicinal properties. Dandelion particularly has... At this time of year, the new leaves are very nutritious and we put them into our salads, but they are also good for cleansing at this time of year. It's often a time when people, after all the excesses of Christmas and New Year, people often do detox diets, and the things that are growing just now, the new green growth is excellent for helping to detox.
Prior to the 17th century, when Mary, Queen of Scots, was resident, jousting, hunting, hawking, and archery events were held in the garden's area, and at one point, they were home to a collection of bears, tigers, lynx, a lion, and an ape. Cameron Spence is a visitor services advisor at Visit Scotland. He tells us about the historical significance of the garden.
Yeah, so back in the 17th century, down at the Palace of Holyrood House, there was the original psychic garden. So the psychic garden was used for medicinal purposes at that time. Later, it was then moved essentially to what is now the Royal Botanical Gardens. So it's really quite a significant part of the palace's history. Quite nice to see it being brought back to the palace in the 21st century.
2020 will mark the 350th anniversary since the original visit garden was made. The garden will open in spring 2019.
A cycle hire scheme is to be put into practice in Edinburgh later this year. The move follows similar projects that have been put into place in London and Glasgow, both of which have proved to be a success. But does that mean it will be successful here as well? And could it help to end Edinburgh's notorious problem with pollution? Our reporter on wheels, Ross Cowper-Fraser, takes a closer look.
10 years on from the original plans, Edinburgh City Council are now planning to invest £150,000 into a bike scheme which will set Edinburgh with the likes of London and Glasgow. The plans come for Edinburgh as Glasgow prepares to double the size of its cycling scheme.
Next Bike, which operates the Glasgow scheme, is also trialling one for the Royal Bank of Scotland staff in Edinburgh. Edinburgh is now believed to have £4 million sponsorship deal in place, similar to that of Santander in London. Ian Maxwell, who is a representative for Spokes, the Lothian Cycling Campaign, is pleased that the scheme is coming to Edinburgh, but is sceptical about where the funds would be coming from for this project.
It would be good to have a hire scheme, but we have some concerns. If money that could be spent on improving cycle facilities gets diverted into a hire scheme, that would be a problem, because there's still a lot to do in improving the cycle lanes and other facilities like cycle parking in Edinburgh.
The recent launch of the 20 mile an hour speed limit has helped to reduce the city's carbon emissions, and the bike scheme will also help to contribute to Edinburgh becoming greener. Maxwell went on to say that the City Council should implement a specific strategy which will allow them to reduce the pollution as much as possible.
If, for instance, we had congestion charging and a hire scheme, which is what happened in London effectively, that would be a real, that would address both sides of the problem and would be a real gain. Although Glasgow is doing some interesting things at the moment, I think we need to look elsewhere. We need to look at major international cities like London, Paris, New York, where all of whom have done both traffic restraint, road management schemes and major cycle hire. You want to be in a position where as you travel through the centre of town, you're never far from a cycle hire docking station.
It remains to be seen how well the scheme will work when it is implemented. It has worked for some but failed for others. But at least for the time being, we can hope that it will benefit the locals with regard to getting on with exercise and hopping back on their bike.
A group of neo-Nazi extremists plan to take to the streets of Edinburgh on Saturday and march to mark Global White Pride Day. The march is planned for the same day as a Sikh religious festival, which will see hundreds join a procession through the streets of the capital. The White Pride March is claimed to have been organised by far-right group National Front. Our reporter, Daisy Smith, investigates further to see if this sort of extremism is a widespread problem in Scotland.
This is what a previous march in Dundee sounded like. Could these sounds be heard on the streets of Edinburgh on Saturday? The White Pride March will take place on the same day as the Nagar Kirtan Festival, which will see hundreds of Sikhs join a procession of hymns, music and martial arts. Supporters of White Pride Day have said that it will help to secure the existence of our people and the future of white children. The Unite Against Fascism group have claimed that the march is being planned by the British National Front, who are known for their extremist views. This same group held a similar march in Swansea on the same day last year. Unite Against Fascism have organised a counter-demonstration to oppose the extremist event. Professor of Sociology at the University of Edinburgh, Jonathan Hearn, shared his views on why there may be less extremists in Scotland than in England.
One of the issues in Scotland is that, you know, there isn't the same numbers and sort of spatial concentration of some ethnic groups which can sometimes, in some of the, you know, English cities, lead to more racial tension.
He also explained how Brexit has impacted upon British society's attitudes towards minorities.
Sure, you know, there's more extremism. You know, you might read Brexit as suggesting there's more extremism in the sense that that process has kind of flushed out some of those views and made it easier for people to talk about them publicly.
Although racial hate crimes are prevalent throughout Scotland, Edinburgh's reports of religiously aggravated crime has more than doubled since 2011. In the years of 2010 and 2011, there had been 26 reports of crime against religion in the capital, but in the year 2016, there were 57. Kulbir Singh Bah, the president of the Edinburgh Guru Nanak Gurdwara, will not let the far-right march hinder their celebrations and will go ahead as planned.
They're doing on the other side of the town, and we're just doing a very peaceful religious walk. 90%, 80% will be children with us. So we want to show the children. Now it's all up to the local authorities, like for extra security and protection. That's their job. Like.
Earlier this month, a demonstration organised by the Scottish Defence League, who have similar extremist views as the National Front, was held in Alloa, Clackmannanshire. Despite claims of a high number of attendees, the turnout was minimal, with only 40 people attending. Paul Sillett, a national campaigner for Unite Against Fascism, commented on the number of supporters the National Front has.
Certainly the National Front are a tiny, poisonous rump. You know, their last demonstration in Wales of this nature got no more than 50 people from across Britain. And we want to ensure they don't get a toehold anywhere. And they're very, very tiny because of anti-fascist efforts. And we want to make sure that they're as small as possible. So it could be the case that there's very, very few of them, in which case that'd be a brilliant thing. You know, the Sikh religious procession can take place without any trouble.
A spokeswoman for Edinburgh City Council said that they have not been officially informed of the march by extremists and it is illegal for it to go ahead without their permission. However, if the demonstrators are static and standing still, then they are within their rights to do so. We contacted the BNF, but they declined to comment.
Leith becomes the centre of Scottish football on Wednesday, as Scotland is set to take on Canada at Hibernian's Easter Road.
After 2 years away, the national side is set to return to the capital. The match against Canada is in preparation for Sunday's World Cup qualifier against Slovenia. With both the scenery and the system set to change, manager Gordon Strachan looks for intensity from his men on Wednesday night. With the tactics in place, Strachan is confident his players will show composure on the day.
We know how I'm going to play on Sunday. We now know how we're going to play on Wednesday with the group we have. And what will suit the players, because there's no point in bringing players in and we're playing them out of position that doesn't suit them. That's ailing to them. So we'll try and get a system that suits most of the players that are going to play on Wednesday night.
Mr. Strachan added that although his players will show professionalism against the North American side, Sunday's qualifier is of the utmost importance.
I'm sure that they'll find the Canadians that we'll give them as much respect as we can, as long as they understand that the next game for us is a huge game for us as a football team in their country.
One player who's used to the Easter Road surroundings is John McGinn. The 22-year-old is set to feature for the national side despite playing in the Scottish Championship. His club manager, Neil Lennon, told us of his ability and how he's come on as a player.
I think it's a testament to John, you know, that he's playing in the Championship and he's made the squad, you know, on a continual basis. I think he's got better and better as the season's gone on, and we're really seeing the best of him now. I think the injury curtailed some of his performances, but now he's playing at the top of his game. He's been playing superbly well and thoroughly merits his call-up.
Although the Canadians have not qualified for the World Cup finals in Russia 2018, interim manager Michael Findlay insists this game will not be treated as a friendly.
So we're going through a strong assessment process and also trying to do that inside a competitive environment, because we can't afford to call these friendlies anymore. We need to be relevant and we need to be on the front foot.
In the Scottish team on Wednesday, there won't be any Celtic players, but the Canadian coach still thinks the pedigree of the Scotland squad is quite strong.
All of these players are of a high quality. I understand what he's probably looking at. It's interesting, you know, his description in the press yesterday, it's very similar to Canada. Our players, we're looking for valuable minutes out of our players, and we struggle to get those other than a couple. But we're going to be concerned about everybody because, you know, as I say, there's a high quality group in there, whether they're starting or not.
Canadian Luca Gasparato, who plays domestically with Falkirk, says the Canadians will be no pushover.
I think we're coming here as underdogs on Wednesday, so there's not much expected of us, and we're just going to go out, and it's nice to be under the radar. Nobody knows about us, but we're going to come out, we're going to press, we're going to try to keep the ball moving, get some chances and hopefully score a few goals and put on a good performance. That's what we're looking to do.
Reports have suggested that only 5,000 tickets have been sold so far. This might be why the Scottish manager has urged fans to come forward and support the national side.
Now, here is Bryce Donaldson with a roundup of today's sports news.
Thank you, David. A UK Athletics review reports that British track and field para athletes could manipulate medical records to boost their medal chances. Professor John Brewer, who is part of the review panel, explains how a review committee and improved medical documentation can stop manipulation in the future.
We think our recommendations will help to make that process even better and stronger, and provide a real deterrent for any athlete or coach who decides that they will try and manipulate the system to their advantage.
Manchester United midfielder Bastian Schweinsteiger is leaving to join American side Chicago Fire. The former World Cup winner will secure his move to Major League Soccer once he completes a medical and gets a visa. Schweinsteiger posted a farewell message on his social media.
I have decided to make a permanent move to Chicago Fire. I really wish that I could have done more for you, but it was time for me to make a change. Thank you especially for your amazing support during my time at the club. I will never forget it.
Leicester City have offered striker Jamie Vardy and his family extra security after he received death threats following Claudio Ranieri's sacking as manager. Vardy has denied having any involvement in Ranieri's sacking. Today, Scotland's third most capped rugby player, Sean Lamont, has announced his retirement from the sport. This announcement comes as a shock, as only 2 years ago Lamont said he would never retire. Lamont was a prolific try scorer for Scotland, and his points will be missed by many fans.
And finally, Norway is officially the world's happiest country, whereas the UK was ranked only 19th according to the World Happiness Report. Norway pipped fellow Scandinavians in Denmark to the title, while doing so leapfrogged Iceland and Switzerland. The report used data based on income, health and emotional well-being. Our reporter, Constance Maria, went to find out what makes Norway so much happier than Scotland.
What you just heard was a traditional joik sung by some very happy native Norwegians. The chilly climate and expensive alcohol didn't hold back the country from basking in the glow of being named the world's happiest country. The report is produced by creating average scores based on six areas of each country: income, life expectancy, social support, generosity, freedom, and trust. The ranking is also based on answers to a simple life evaluation question developed decades ago by a social scientist called Gallup. We talked to Anna, who grew up in Norway and is currently living in Edinburgh, if she was surprised by the result.
Well, I was in the beginning because I've never really seen Norway as the most happy country in the world, especially not when you compare it to other Scandinavian countries. And especially the fact that I beat Denmark kind of surprised me, because I feel like there's some social and financial differences between Denmark and Norway that are, have been like not massive, but they've been noticeable the last couple of years, enough so that I would personally say that I prefer, like, I think the Danish people are more happy people than Norwegian people.
The UK, despite a tempered political climate fueled by Brexit and talks of the union breaking up, moved up the report's ranking. It now places the 19th place, up from 23rd last year. We asked Anna if she thought Norwegians seemed happier than Scotsmen.
Well, the main difference that I've noticed between like the common population of Scotland versus Norway is the way people are raised and how like their culture affects them in the long run. For example, like the class system is just generally more visible, that especially with the working classes in the UK. And I feel like also the formality that people express here is, it is just that, it is a formality. While in Norway, we're usually, we're nice and caring and we have more empathy for people compared to like Scottish people. But I love Scottish people, like, don't get me wrong. Like, I absolutely love the cheeky attitude and the fact that they don't really give a about people, but at the same time, like, they'll like go to the pub with you and buy you a pint, but they might stab you in the alleyway later on.
We asked the people of Edinburgh what they believe needs to change in order for the UK to climb the ladder.
If you could make the weather nicer, that would help.
Maybe a bit more community spirit.
Elect better politicians.
I don't know, maybe go independent.
Get Nicola Sturgeon to shut up.
Reduce beer consumption.
If we drink less alcohol.
You can buy alcohol after 10 o'clock.
We need more bouncy castles.
Have a more diverse Scotland. Different cultures all come together.
But what does it really mean to be happy? A long-running Harvard study claims to have found the secrets to a happy life. The 70-year-old study closely tracked 700 men and their family, suggesting that one of the most significant predictors of whether you age well and live a long and happy life is not the amount of money you amass or fame you receive. A much more important barometer of long-term health and well-being is the strength of your relationships with family, friends, and spouses. With that in mind, don't forget Mother's Day on Sunday.
Now, the evening weather forecast. Still a few wintry showers at first, these dying down out during the night as the winds ease, a widespread frost developing, sharp in places, south clouding over with rain or snow. And the traffic in Edinburgh. Several early morning accidents made driving conditions difficult for motorists. A jackknife lorry on the A8 at Neuro Central led to delays in wintry conditions, while the A77 was restricted for more than an hour after a crash. Snow also led to the closure of the A38 between Arracha and Dunoon. Today's headlines again. Scottish Parliament. Nicola Sturgeon spoke today at Holyrood for backing to take a second Scottish referendum to Parliament. She had the support of the Greens, but opposing parties sought to rule it out. Controversial former Deputy First Minister of Northern Ireland and Sinn Féin member Martin McGuinness has today died after suffering for many years from a rare heart condition. He was 66 years of age. Britain will announce a ban on laptops and other electronic devices on certain flights. This is following the US announcement this morning, banning devices larger than mobile phones or flights from early Middle Eastern and African countries. That is all from us here at Radio Energy. Thank you to all of our reporters. I am David Paul. Our next show is tomorrow at 9 a.m. Thank you for listening and have a very good evening.
Hear it. Feel it. Listen again at www.radioenrg.net.